We'll move to the last case of the morning. This is Sylvia Adams versus PBS Broadcasting.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Victor.
Herbert Victor for the plaintiff. This appeal, Your Honor, is taken from the decision of the district court granting the defendant's Rule 56 motion for summary judgment. The thrust of that motion is predicated upon two main points. One point is that Title VII claim was not properly filed with the EEOC or the Illinois Department of Human Rights within the 300 statutory days from the date of the incident of discrimination. Let me address that problem first, Your Honor. The plaintiff was hired by the defendant on June 9th, 1998. During that period of time that she was interviewed and hired, she had worked for the, prior to that time, she had worked for the defendant on a per diem basis for at least 4 years. When she was offered the job full time, she was offered the job by David Horwith, who was the associate director of the technical operation and engineering of CBS. She was told at that time that she's entry level. She was told at that time that her non-CBS employment was not a consideration as to her abilities. But she was never told at that time that she could negotiate her salary in accordance with the national collective bargaining agreement, which sets out six separate tiers of compensation based upon experience.
But I thought, A, that the record showed that no one was told that they could negotiate their salary, and B, that when she started, they did in fact give her credit for some prior work. They didn't start her at entry level, in other words, even though she'd only been a contract person and the aggregate amounted to about a year, they gave her more credit than that. Didn't they start at level three?
Level three, right.
Yeah, level three.
Which is 2 to 3 years experience.
Right. And so that's more than the year that the days added up to. It's less than level six, of course. But it's hard for me to see how, if they don't tell anybody about negotiation possibilities, and if they in fact do give her more than they had to, how that amounts to a discrimination claim.
That's not the discrimination claim. Those are the conditions of employment that they said it was set out, you know, when she was employed on June 9th, 1998. She did not become aware of the fact that she was discriminated against until about 10 months later, in March of 1999, when she was told by a union steward that other non-minority people were hired for the same position, given full credit for non-CBS employment. Now, if we go back to the date of hiring, she filed, of course, with the EEOC more than 300 days from the date of hiring. If we go back from the date of knowledge, and I think that the law is quite clear in this respect, that the 300 days starts from the date of knowledge by the aggrieved person, then she did file within the 300 days. The reason that I bring up the non-disclosure of the right to negotiate the contract is that the defendant in its brief used that as an argument that she had the full knowledge and the ability to negotiate her contract at the time of hiring.
What I was thinking is the district court also got some ruling in the alternative. Even if we were to agree with you about the 300 days, and I agree with you, that's a separate issue, who is really similarly situated to her? Suppose you were on time.
Because that's the
second
issue.
Doing a regular McDonnell Douglas analysis.
That's the second issue, Your Honor. The second issue is in March of 1999. She was told by the union steward about two female employees that were given full credit for their non-CBS employment.
But before the court on summary judgment, who do you say was similarly situated?
These two ladies.
these two ladies, which were identified in our brief, which...
But aren't they the people who have different kinds of jobs? Aren't they in aspects of this technician job, the photography, that were in higher demand?
Not that we know of, Your Honor. The plaintiff in this case is a camera...
What are their names?
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't have that information.
These are the ones that were hired in 1981?
Yes.
Oh, the 81 people, yeah.
That goes way back, doesn't it?
It goes way back, but when the conditions of employment... when the conditions of employment are not universally indicated and not universally used, there's got to be a suspicion of the reason. They make no difference as to whether or not the conditions of employment used in 1981 were not used in 1998.
I thought they did. I thought they said the nationwide collective bargaining agreement you referred to didn't exist then. There certainly were different people in hiring... different supervisors hiring. Surely a lot changed between, and they particularly point to CBA.
They don't, you know, with the resources of the defendant, they have not produced anything that would indicate, other than the representation, that the CBA was different or that the condition of employment were different.
Did you ask to see all CBAs that covered this period of time?
I don't know if that was asked or not during the course of discovery, Your Honor. But we have indicated that there are two minority employees that were hired for basically the same position, whether or not they were technicians. And they were hired in the technician department, given full credit for non-CBS employment. We believe that the district court, you understand, violated its discretion in selecting an inference, in choosing an inference, and in just adopting the ruling, the argument of the defendant. Page 6 of the opinion of the district court, in the opinion of the plaintiff, clearly indicates that the district court just simply bought the argument of the defendant. And the inference that we have created creates a substantial period of fact for to be determined by the trier of the fact. I'll reserve the rest of my time, Your Honor, for rebuttal.
Okay. Mr. Robin?
May it please the Court, my name is Howard Robbins. I represent the appellant, CBS Broadcasting, Inc. Your Honor, we believe that the district court properly granted summary judgment on three independent bases: timeliness, dismissal of the Section 1981 and Title VII claim, and then failure to make out a prima facie case or to prove pretext on either of the two claims. And I believe the arguments are set out fully in the brief, but I would like to respond to the arguments made by appellant's counsel and to correct some items about what the record does show. As Judge Wood pointed out, indeed, no one of the technicians, and this is supported by affidavits in the record, no one was told that they could negotiate. It was simply a matter of practice within the industry that some chose to do so. Ms. Adams did not hear, not H-E-A-R, but H-E-R-E, did not hear do that, and of course one can't know then what the salary would have been. With regard to the assertion that the plaintiff became aware only in March of 1999, of a possible claim. That is, I believe, a misstatement of the record that was made in the district court brief in opposition to summary judgment and again here on appeal. And as Judge Kokoris pointed out, there simply is no support in the record for the assertion that the plaintiff learned anything additional at that time to put her on notice that she had a discrimination claim.
Is there evidence in the record to show that at the time of her hire she was somehow informed that CBS had this six-year wage structure?
Yes, there is, Your Honor. At page 42 of the plaintiff's transcript testimony, as well as in her own affidavit, the plaintiff's 56.1 statement, paragraph 33, as well as the affidavits of Mr. Hayworth, paragraph 6, and Mr. Collins in paragraph 7, that during the interview, the plaintiff was told of the level of salary tiers, and if you look at the transcript of the deposition, she says, I know there are these she thought it was five tiers, not six, but that she knew that she had was three levels below the top tier. So she was entirely aware of this and where she'd been placed within that pay escalator. And the term, it's called a wage escalator, and it's a good metaphor because once one is placed on it, one rises automatically as the years go by.
But how would she know, as of the time of hiring, how CBS treats other employees, of course, who have, you know, privacy interests in their own files and the like, how they treat other employees vis-a-vis their prior non-CBS work? Isn't that the kind of thing that you really would only learn later?
One would only learn later, I suppose, through discovery, the precise details about who earned what. That's true. But I would note that the plaintiff did file her charge when she knew no more than she did on the date of hire in June of 1998.
But doesn't she allege, though, that she was told more so that she did, in fact, have, you know, obviously office gossip or whatever. We can all talk about how reliable this information is, but that's how these cases start often. Somebody says, oh, by the way, you know, X, or I know about somebody who got full credit for their non-CBS work. And then you start thinking, gee, why didn't I?
Your Honor, the record evidence, however, is only that Ms. Adams heard in this conversation with coworkers and union representatives that others told her, gee, you should be making top scale. And that's it. There is simply no more in the record beyond that. So to say to someone, as an opinion of a coworker, which itself is of limited value, you should be getting more, I don't think that establishes a level of knowledge that's different from what the plaintiff knew as of June 98 when she was hired. As far as the comparables, what I'd like to point out in the record is that there's been a shifting identification of the supposedly similarly situated individuals. In the plaintiff's brief to the district court, technicians Kovitz and Kelvin were the ones who identified. Those were the ones hired in 1981. I would point out that in the affidavit of Mr. Collins, the reply affidavit, that attaches the two letters to those individuals, hiring them and noting that they were being hired at the 30-month level, which is what then existed. So there, although there was actually no discovery request for that information, we did happen to produce it in support of our motion for summary judgment. So Kovitz and Calvin were initially identified, and then previously in the plaintiff's interrogatory responses, which are also part of this record, two different individuals were identified, technicians Smolik and Hollis. Those didn't carry the day because they were maintenance technicians who, because of their specialty by contract and by practice, also get wages above the other technicians. On appeal, in the appellant's brief, no particular individuals are identified. Smolik and Hollis not mentioned, Kovitz and Calvin not mentioned. Instead, references made to these charts that were dealt with quite thoroughly, I think, by Judge Koukouras as being unreliable and incomplete, and simply not enough to prove either a prima facie case, and certainly not to sustain the finding of pretext for discrimination. Unless there are any other questions, I would just submit that the district court's decision should be affirmed. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Victor?
The issue of the 300 days, Your Honor, I think that has gone, we've gone over that quite clearly. The issue of the similarly situated employees were clearly made known to the district court and clearly made known to the appellate court as to the two individuals that were hired. Yes, some years ago, but they were hired with full consideration for non-CBS employment. We believe that we have created a substantial issue of fact in our brief with the district court and in our brief here that it should be tried by the trier of the court. We ask for the district court to be reversed and for this matter to be remanded. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. That case will be taken under advisement.